translation. O demigods, I instruct you to approach Vishwarup, the son of Tvashta, and accept him as your guru. He is a pure and very powerful Brahmana, undergoing austerities and penances. Pleased by your worship, he will fulfill your desires, provided that you tolerate his being inclined to side with the demons. Srila Prabhupada's purport. Lord Brahma advised the demigods to accept the son of Tvashta as their spiritual master, although he was always inclined toward the benefit of the asuras. So this is Lord Brahma speaking to the demigods. So he's telling them to accept Vishwarup as their guru. Why do they need a guru? Who's the standard guru of the demigods? Brahaspati. And he went home to see his parents, right? Therefore, he can't do his service. What happened to Brihaspati?
He took a walk.
And did he get anybody to cover his engagements?
No.
So you see, this happens all over. Now, why did he take a walk? I'm just trying to get the story out, huh? What happened? Do you know this story? Yeah, ignorant of the Shastra? Indra offended him. How did that happen?
Brihaspati came into the place where Indra was sitting on those
It was a court, right?
Right.
It was a court. Indra means king, right? So where's Indra seated? Let's set the scene. Come on. Say you're, making a play set. What do you do?
He was seated on the throne.
Yeah. Who was with him? Sachi, right?
His wife.
The queen. So he's naturally surrounded by ministers, flatterers, jokers, the whole entourage, right? Chamra's fans were going up and down. People were swinging nice songs, right? So he was sitting up there like a king in all his pomp. And so then Brihaspati enters. So what should have Indra have done when his guru entered? We should have first of all stood up and offered his obeisances to his guru. Because even though one is a king, Vedic culture is the Brahmana is higher, even though Brahmanas don't have entourages, thrones, and all those other things. Sometimes they do, but even if they don't. But he didn't do it because he was a little puffed up at the time. So what did Brihaspati do upon receiving this, seeing this breach of etiquette? Don't think etiquette's a little thing. We make a big distinction in the West between morals and etiquette. And morals are serious, but etiquette means you use the wrong fork, to eat your oysters with. So that doesn't seem like such a big sin. But in Vedic culture, etiquette's a serious matter. Proper behavior. So what did Brihaspati do? Who remembers at this breach of etiquette? He got up and went out. It says specifically, what didn't he do?
He didn't speak,
and he didn't curse. He could have cursed Indra, but he didn't do that. They just became deprived of his mercy. So as a result of that, what happened? What was the effects here? Yeah, the demons began to get very, very strong and to pursue their aggressive policies very effectively. Who was their spiritual master? Shukracharya. They were taking very nice care of him at the time, so they were very strong, right? So now Lord Brahma has come to them and told them. Well, he didn't come to them. Indra went to Brahma, next highest up the line. Indra is the king of the demigods, but really, he's just in charge of the Svarga planetary system of the empowered, bureaucratic, administrative demigods. And then higher than his planetary system, the Svarga, is the Tapaloka, Janaloka, Maharloka, Tapaloka, Janaloka, and Satyaloka, Brahma's planets, where people are performing austerities and penances. So therefore, when Indra gets in real trouble, sometimes he approaches Brahma with all the demigods. Just like when they wanted the burden of earth relieved from the demons, before Krishna's advent, they went to Lord Brahma, who then approached Vishnu, and that way you gradually moved up the hierarchy until you got to the top. So anyway, this time they went to Brahma. So Brahma said, explained to them that they lost the mercy of Brihaspati, and this is why they're losing. Of course, Indra already knew that. So now he gives them advice. You need a guru. That's your problem. You don't have a guru who can give you the knowledge necessary to defeat the demons. So he says, this is whom you should approach. You should approach, what's his name? Vishwarup. Who's his father? Tvashta, the Vishwarup, the son of Tvashta. Who's a young brahmachari, really. As we'll see, he's not an old, elderly, you know. See, he's kind of a... not a proven person on this guru, on the spiritual scene. And so he says here, you have to approach him. He's described here as Atmavantam, very independent. And this is the nature of Vishwarup. And he gives him his qualifications. He's pure. He's a Vipra, perfect Brahmana, Tapasvinam, and has undergone great austerities and penances, so therefore it's powerful. He's very pure and very powerful. So you worship him nicely, and you have to tolerate, it says, his karma, certain of his activities, which is, it explains here, that he is in, his activities is that he's inclined toward the asuras. But in spite of that, his friendliness toward the asuras, he'll help you if you approach him properly. That's what Brahma is saying here. Right? So he's telling him what to do. So now we're going to see how they approach Tvashta. I mean, not Tvashta, the son of Tvashta, Vishwarup, and what happens. Okay, any questions about this? Yeah?
How can a Brahmana be inclined for it?
Oh, well, Shukracharya is also a Brahmana. He's their guru.
But he wasn't pure.
No, he was contaminated. Other than that, I don't know. You know, these are different ages and different circumstances. So it says here, he's very pure and very powerful Brahmana, but he has this inclination. Sometimes it's there, you know. Just like Lord Balaram was inclined to the wrong side in the Battle of Kurukshetra. So I don't know what the explanation is any more than why this happens. Maybe we'll find out. I'm going to keep on going here, okay? Yes?
Just one question. Brihaspati left, and they needed to get a new guru. In a sense, did he quit?
Yeah, that's what he did. He just quit.
I don't mean insulting.
Yeah, he did. They lost his mercy, and he just... he didn't curse them, you see, so that they're not struggling under a positive curse. They're just struggling under the lack of his mercy. So they were all offenders, and so he just quit. Yeah. We're on strike. Okay, text 26. I won't read the Sanskrit. Sri Shukadeva Goswami continued, thus advised by Lord Brahma, and relieved of their anxiety, all the demigods went to the sage Vishwarupa, the son of Tvasta. My dear king, they embraced him and spoke as follows. Next text says, Sri Deva Ujahu, the demigod said, and this is what they said, beloved Vishwarup, may there be all good fortune unto you. This is a Bhadramastute, like a benediction thing. May there be all good fortune unto you. We, the demigods, have come to your ashram as your guests. Please try to fulfill our desires according to the time, since we are on the level of your parents. You see, he's a junior man, Vishwarupa. That will become clear. So they're coming to him. Now notice what they do. It's very, very interesting. They embrace him and offer him good fortune. Then they claim the status of guests, that is, so therefore he's the host, and therefore you have to please your guest. Whatever he asks, you have to give him. And also, we're like your parents. So also, you have to satisfy us. This is the position they're taking. Persuasive. They need him very badly. So then they go on. Text 28. O Brahmana, the highest duty of a son, even though he has sons of his own, is to serve his parents. I want to speak of a son who is a brahmachari. So here they're putting it, we're like your parents. We're on the level of your parents. So your duty, your paraha dharmaha, your highest duty, is pitri shushrusanam, to please your fathers and forefathers and so on. This is the duty of those that have, even those who have children of their own, so what to speak of a brahmachari. Then now they recite, next 29 and 30, they recite some more moral principles. There's a purport to this verse. I'll read the Sanskrit. Acharyo brahmano murti pita murti prajapate brahta marutpater murtir mata sakshachite stanuhu dayaya bhagini murtir dharmasya atma titi swayam agner abhyagato murti sarvabhutani chatmanah. They say, the Acharya, the spiritual master who teaches all the Vedic knowledge and gives initiation by offering the sacred thread, is the personification of all the Vedas. Similarly, a father personifies Lord Brahma, a brother, King Indra, a mother, the planet Earth, and a sister, mercy. A guest personifies religious principles. An invited guest personifies the demigod Agni, and all living entities personify Lord Vishnu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Srila Prabhupada's purport. According to the moral instructions of Chanakya Pandit, Atmavat Sarva Bhuteshu, one should observe all living entities to be on the same level as oneself. This means that no one should be neglected as inferior. Because Paramatma is seated in everyone's body, everyone should be respected as a temple of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This verse describes the different ways in which one should respect a guru, a father, a brother, a sister, a guest, and so on. Acharyo Brahmano Murti. The word used here throughout is Murti, the personified form. So the Acharya, the spiritual master, is the Vedas personified. He represents the Vedas, the form of the Vedas. Pita Murti, the father, Lord Brahma. The brother, Indra. And the mother, Sakshat Siti Stanu, is the body of the earth, planet earth. Tanu means body. Bhagini, sister, personifies mercy. Everybody who has a sister knows that. A guest personifies religious principles. An invited guest, the demigod Agni, and all living entities personify Lord Vishnu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. All living entities. Sarva Bhutani Chatma. So why is that? Why do all living entities personify Lord Vishnu? Not because they are God, as sometimes Mayavadis say, but because everyone is a temple of Lord Vishnu, because he's dwelling in the heart as Supersoul. He has taken up residence in the heart of Sarva Bhuteshu, all living beings. So the body of every living creature is a temple of Vishnu, a mandir. Pandita Samadarshanaha. So therefore those who are wise, they see everyone the same, and therefore they treat everyone with the same respect. So that's Chanakya Pandit's quoted here, Atmavat Sarvabhuteshu. One should observe all living entities to be on the same level as oneself. So this is Maya. This is Maya when one sees other living beings in terms of higher and lower, making material calculation based on the bodily covering. So there's brahmanas especially are supposed to see in this way. No one should be neglected as inferior. It doesn't mean, of course, that you can treat everyone the same way, because they have different capacities. But according to capacity, they should be offered all respect. Neglect means to neglect to try to help them become Krishna conscious within the limits of their capacities. One neglects that, that's actually considered violence to the living entity. As far as a devotee is concerned, everyone else is a devotee. And if they're forgotten, then it's the devotee's business to try to be kind to them and help them remember. So therefore should treat everyone on the same level. So we make no distinctions in this Krishna consciousness movement. Everyone we regard as a candidate for Krishna consciousness, and try to give them Krishna consciousness without any making any discrimination on this matter. So it's on the bodily platform that people become absorbed in material designations, and they center their whole life around them. And these material designations are due to the illusory identification of the self with the material body, which is so strong. We see now that in Eastern Europe, in the Soviet Union, for example, in the Soviet Union, there's been a communist state in power since the 1920s. All class distinctions are supposed to be obliterated. All nationalistic distinctions are supposed to be obliterated. So for nearly 70 years, this official doctrine has been forced on people. As soon as it is lifted, immediately everyone becomes supranationalist. Lithuania, Estonia, Latvia, Russians, Ukrainians, and in the Balkans, well, it's becoming Balkanized. They say the Serbs and the Croatians, and everybody wants to succeed from everybody else, so fragment into small little tiny nationalistic groups. So many years of communism and not one single person got off the bodily platform. As soon as it's lifted, instantly, everybody's into it. They just suppressed their feelings for so long. But as soon as it's allowable, Jews are leaving Russia like crazy because of an upsurge of anti-Semitism. You know, all those years was simply repressed. No one got off the bodily platform. Because it's very, very, very strong, this identification. One thinks that the place he is born is to be worshipped. Just because I'm born there, no matter how desolate a place it is, one thinks it is glorious simply because I happen to be born here, and takes all pride in this or that little ethnic designation. So in this way, people make their causes and their identities on the basis of people want to know who I am. You know, I want to know who I am. What am I? They want to have something they can identify with and feel secure with, and so they make something on the bodily platform like this. So one cannot actually see every living entity on the same level as oneself in any kind of artificial way. Ultimately, because selfishness is there, one's own self-interest, even when you get people of broader humanitarian vision, and that's usually as far as it goes. Some efforts behind the United Nations is everything, as people try to overcome by various creeds these different ideologies of equality, and everyone pays lip service to it, but when it comes down to it, nobody, very few people actually practice it. And people will believe it, but when it actually comes down to things like redistribution of wealth and things like that, nothing budges. And here Prabhupada says that one should see not just the soul, but the super soul. One has to first understand what the situation is, that the living entities are covered by their material bodies, and that behind the body there's the soul. And each soul is part and parcel of the supreme soul, who is the self in all living beings. And the super soul in my heart, I'm one soul and you're another soul, but the super soul in my heart and the super soul in your heart, that's the same. There's only one super soul in all living beings. So therefore, what's in the core of my heart and what's in the core of your heart is identical. And that's Krishna. And we're really part and parcel of Krishna. So in that sense, it's all one. Because we're little fragmental, energetic particles of Krishna, little fractional portions of Him. So if that vision is there of Krishna, and seeing every living entity as the bearer of Krishna, then these bodily distinctions go away. But as long as one is on the material platform, because of sense gratification, that's what does it. The cause of Maya, the cause of the illusory identification of the self with the material body, is sense gratification. No one gets off the bodily platform while they're engaged in sense gratification. That's a simple fact. those of us who wish to become free from the false identification of the self with the material body have to become free from sense gratification. And the more we're immersed and dependent upon and steeped in and dedicated to sense gratification, the more vigorously we will identify ourselves with the material body and therefore see everyone else also in terms of the material body. We'll not be able to see everyone the same at all. But as soon as we turn our activities to the devotional service of Krishna, to the Supersoul in everyone's heart, and worship Him with our mind and senses, then gradually what's the dim background, that is to say, to one in Maya, God at best is the dim background, if He's there at all, that becomes the foreground. He comes out, as it were, from hiding. He's not in hiding. We're the ones in hiding. But we can actually see the Lord working, and see everyone as part and parcel of Krishna and as the servant of Krishna. So that's why it says here, sarva bhutani chatmanaha. This atma refers to God. Actually, there's only one self. In the purport to prayers put the sanified Vedas, and Prabhupada explains how the word atma properly refers to God, and only in a derivative fashion refers to the jivas. Because the self, the one self, is Krishna. Because all other selves are part and parcel of Him. So He's really the atma. He's the self. He's the self of all selves. So, when we see correctly, we see the proper position, we see matter, we see spirit, that is to say all the jivas, and we see the controller of both, that is to say the Supersoul. That's the correct vision of things. So this is part of the instructions here. How one should see other living entities in this way. So you can see if people actually come to this platform, very pleasant people, because they're respectful, they're not proud and contemptuous, puffed up because of some temporary feature of their decaying material body. As long as we remember Krishna, then we cannot become proud. But when we forget Krishna, then it's entirely possible. Okay, any questions? Yeah.
You say that we can't understand what we're not defining with meditation, so how far do you take that? Some people like their apartment really warm in the winter, and they like to warm up their car for half an hour in the winter.
So those little innocuous things. Well, it depends. You can tell that if somehow or other it's cold in the winter, if you flip out and you become entirely obsessed with getting warm and you have no time for Krishna consciousness, then it's really... So people may have their preferences their individual taste, but if we become attached to these individual tastes, then that can hold us back. And sometimes it can be a very little thing. Usually most of us are dealing with larger problems than that. But ultimately, because a person who's not on the bodily platform will not be distressed if there's material discomfort, and will not be elated when material comfort is there. So a person may like cold herbal tea. And some arrangements may be there for cold herbal tea, let's say, a little innocuous thing. But if that person is attached to it, and that if it's not there, becomes distressed, then is on the bodily platform. So the position of a liberated soul, that is to say, one who doesn't identify with the body, is that it tolerates. It actually becomes indifferent. The sign of becoming advanced in Krishna consciousness is that one actually becomes more and more indifferent to these things. Now, one way to become more and more indifferent is just to put yourself in the, you know, give yourself the shock treatment, the cold shower in the morning, and so on. That will make you indifferent sooner or later. But if one becomes attached, you know, to certain amenities, and those amenities are suddenly taken away, and one becomes distressed, then you can understand that we're not in the spiritual platform. So one wonders, well, how much sense gratification am I entitled to? Do I have to become like the six Goswamis in Vrindavan? No, not necessarily. But whatever is needed to keep body and soul together, that's what we're... Bhagavatam says we're entitled to as much as we need for good health. That's what he says. So anyway, we should work on... Usually in our minds there's something, some attachment that keeps us from surrendering to Krishna. And we should, you know, work on things. Don't try to take on everything at once. But mostly by dedicating ourselves to the advancement of Krishna consciousness, by following the regular principles and chanting our rounds, then we go on. In household or life, there's some facility for these little things. Your cold herbal tea, your hot house, your silver-coated fingernail clippers with your initials on them. These little things that make a person feel better. But brahmachari life, supposedly these things are not supposed to be there, although some brahmacharis can get fairly cozy there. That's not really the spirit of brahmachari life. Householder life is there, but if one follows the regular principles of householder life, then that person can also make progress. But one should be careful. Could you hand me the Bhagavad Gita, Rohini? I'll show you something that Prabhupada says about this in the third chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Krishna says in the third chapter, he says that there are Vedic texts that prescribe the rules and regulations for attachment or detachment from the sense objects, something like that. But he said one should not actually become... Oh yeah, here it says, Indriyasyindriyasyarte raga dvesho vyavastitau tayor navasham agachet tau kyasya paripantinau. There are principles to regulate attachment and aversion pertaining to the senses and their objects. So this is the material platform of attachment and aversion to the senses and their objects. So here he says there are principles to regulate those. Where are those principles? The Vedas. But, Krishna says, one should not come under the control of such attachment and aversion because they are stumbling blocks on the path of self-realization. So Prabhupada says in his purport, those who are in Krishna consciousness are naturally reluctant to engage in material sense gratification. But those who are not in such consciousness should follow the rules and regulations of the revealed scriptures. So this is for the karmis. For the karmis, there are regulations for attachment and aversion. Unrestricted sense enjoyment is the cause of the material encagement. But one who follows the rules and regulations of the revealed scriptures does not become entangled in the sense objects. For example, sex enjoyment is a necessity for the conditioned soul, and sex enjoyment is allowed under the license of marriage ties. According to the scriptural injunctions, one is forbidden to engage in sex relationships with any woman other than one's wife. All other women are to be considered as one's mother. But in spite of such injunctions, a man is still inclined to have sex relationships with other women. These propensities are to be curbed, otherwise they will be stumbling blocks in the path of self-realization. As long as the material body is there, the necessities of the material body are allowed, but under rules and regulations. And yet, so here comes the "and yet" part. Everybody goes, whew, and then Prabhupada says, "and yet." We should not rely upon the control of such allowances. One has to follow those rules and regulations, unattached to them. Because practice of sense gratification under regulations may also lead one to go astray, as much as there is always the chance of an accident even on the royal roads. That is to say, the well-kept interstates and so on, the ones that are maintained by the king. Huh? Although they may be very carefully maintained, no one can guarantee that there will be no danger even on the safest road. The sense enjoyment spirit has been current a very long, long time, owing to material association. Therefore, in spite of regulated sense enjoyment, there is every chance of falling down. Therefore, any attachment for regulated sense enjoyment must be avoided by all means. But attachment to Krishna consciousness, or acting always in the loving service of Krishna, detaches one from all kinds of sensory activities. Therefore, no one should try to be detached from Krishna consciousness at any stage of life. The whole purpose of detachment from all kinds of sense attachment is ultimately to become situated on the platform of Krishna consciousness. So there it is, pretty much, I think. It's clear what Prabhupada is saying. So this, the regulated sense gratification is, of course, better than unrestricted sense gratification, because regulated sense gratification, at least you won't get deeper entangled in material nature. But if one becomes attached to that, even regulated, authorized sense gratification, then there's every chance of falling down. So that ultimately, any attachment, even for regulated sense enjoyment, must also be avoided by all means. And then he says, but attachment to Krishna consciousness. So there's the means. So even if we're practicing some regulated sense enjoyment, you know, my tea is herbal, there's no caffeine in it, and so on, you know, so it's regulated. Still, one should pursue Krishna consciousness, and then gradually even these things will be eliminated. Because any kind of attachment can bring us back to the material world. So it's a little dangerous. So ultimately what we want to be is free from all material attachment. And that is, the sign of that is, that if in a case where we do not get our senses gratified, we don't become angry or distressed. And if our senses do become gratified, we don't become happy and elated and overjoyed and, you know, proud or whatever. But that one is the same. One is the same. This is described in the Bhagavad Gita in happiness and distress. That means, you know, material happiness, material distress, honor and dishonor, pleasure and pain, and so on. One's consciousness remains the same. How is that possible? It's not that we're like some Stoics that are just going to sit there and try to hold it all in while all these things go. No, because actually our happiness and our satisfaction comes from the activities of Krishna consciousness, and they go on. So a devotee leads a double life. He leads a life in the material world, doing material engagements for Krishna, where there's all these things are happening, pleasure and pain, honor and dishonor, happiness and distress. The dualities are coming all the time. You know, Mars conjuncts with Rahu. I mean, all these things happen, you know, and sometimes it's up and sometimes it's down, and you have no control over it, or very little control over it. But the other life of the devotee is in connection with Krishna. He lives in Goloka Vrindavan. He's hearing and chanting Krishna's pastimes. He's thinking about Krishna. That's the real life of the devotee, to hear and chant about Krishna. And absorbed in that, these other things are not very significant. And he tolerates pain, and he also tolerates pleasure. For a devotee, it's just something, the pleasure is another thing you have to tolerate. He's more afraid of pleasure than pain because of thinking, oh, I'll become attached. So these things, I'll just have to be tolerated as they go by. One can do that if one is actually engaged in Krishna's service, one way or another, absorbed in that service. And that service to Krishna cannot be interrupted under any circumstances. Okay? Yeah.
Where do you, draw the line with honoring prasadam or enjoying the taste of it? I mean...
Yeah, well,
if you think, oh, I don't want to take any of that, I don't like that.
Mm-hmm.
Is that an offense? Prasadam?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
One's not supposed to distinguish this is good prasadam, this is bad prasadam. Therefore, Lord Chaitanya and his associates, they wouldn't make any comments until a week had passed. And then they'd say there was too much salt on the kachoris, you know, after 1 week. Yeah. Of course, they had better cooks.
It's a consciousness of you're taking the prasadam to enjoy it. I mean, you are allowed to enjoy it. Prasadam, I'm sure.
You don't enjoy prasadam. I'm sorry, you honor it. Yeah, you honor it. You honor prasad. We don't eat, you know. We honor it. That's what we say. We honor prasad. So we should not honor prasad with the consciousness that I am the enjoyer. We should honor prasad for what it is. It's prasad. This is the mercy of Krishna given to me. It has been tasted by Krishna, and now I'm going to taste it. He's given it to me. Anyway, that's the ideal. Even if you enjoy it, it's better than enjoying, you know, pizzas from Gino's or Vino's or Vivino's or whatever they are down there. It's still good for you to enjoy it. I mean, people come here on the Sunday feast, they're not really committing a big offense because they like it, this, or don't like that. But as one becomes more advanced in Krishna consciousness, one's platform of honoring prasad is also supposed to advance also. Yeah.
If someone is suffering and they just can't be advanced enough, the transcendental enough to not be bothered by it, is it okay to ask Krishna to be relieved from that? Or if you
yeah, sure. Better Krishna than somebody else. You know?
If you really want something that is actually mostly material,
mm-hmm.
and what is the mood that you can play to Krishna for this?
Well, Bhagavatam recommends that in that case you go to Krishna. There's a verse that talks about this. Akarma sava kama va moksha kama udaradi tivrena bhakti yogena yajeta paramam purusham param, like that. And whether you have a kama, whether you have no desires, a sarva kama, you have all desires, or moksha kama, you desire liberation. Udaradi, if you are a person with a wide, broad-minded person, a strong, wide intelligence, tivrena bhakti yogena yajeta, you should engage in strong devotional service. Tivra means intense bhakti yoga to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Earlier the verses, this is in the second canto somewhere, I don't remember the chapter. Earlier the verses had listed all the different demigods you could worship if you want this, that, the other thing. But then it says, but sarvakama, even if you have all desires, whatever it is, no desires, that's a devotee. Devotee is akama. The kama means lust. You have no lust. Or you have all desires, you're just an ocean of it. Or moksha kama, you're desiring liberation. That's also a kind of material desire. Whatever it is, you should worship Krishna. You know. But if you have faith in Krishna, ultimately if you have faith in Krishna, we should understand that. So if you have to pray to Krishna for something material, you should also apologize a little bit. Because ultimately we should pray to Krishna that I'm your servant and you're my master. And we should trust Krishna. Because the fact is that Krishna does satisfy all the desires of the devotee better than the devotee can ever imagine. He purifies us and he purifies our desires and he satisfies them. We shouldn't think that if I become Krishna conscious, there'll still be something lacking. I'll still be wanting this or wanting the other thing. We should at least have the understanding that if Krishna consciousness is there, automatically everything is there.